Russell, this is side two, November 17th, 1978, and this is tape number 363. I might mention that San Francisco Chronicle did have a front story probe into Pope's death demanded. The magazine Star said Pope poisoning theory pushed. The Washington Post had another one, controversy continues over how the Pope died. There were requests from Italy, from Milan, from the Repubblica, a newspaper in Rome, from the University of Madrid, from a Spanish newspaper called El Imparcial, various newspapers asking about the autopsy and investigation into his death, and arguing that they should not avoid facing this because of the nature and suddenness of his death. I bring this up because it's not Mae Brussel who's cooked up some outlandish idea that the Pope was done in, but there have been newspapers all over the country and all over the world asking these questions and considering who the next Pope was who followed them. It almost makes it mandatory to do a little more research on Pope John Paul I and what is known as the Curia in the Vatican. There was a good article in the San Francisco Examiner from the Night News Service, which goes all over the country. The lead article was called John Paul's Smile Masked His Fight with Papal Power. It says the smile that Pope John Paul had, that everyone loved so much, masked a lonely man behind the scenes in a struggle by the pontiff to grasp the reins of the church power. Remember, there were 20 that wouldn't even sign that voted him in, the arch-conservatives, the behind-the-scene voting. This article says there's a conviction that this trying, stressful, uncompleted learning process contributed directly to his death. There were the demands for him to accommodate to a job that left him lonely and isolated. He was frustrated. He simply didn't understand the bureaucracy around the Pope, his functions. He was a pastor. He wasn't an administrator. The last papal election left people joyful and happy. Now there is no sun and no one is relaxed now. The Pope the public sees is really only one of the several popes. This is, as I say, Night News Service. They said he wears many hats. The September Pope struggled to learn what pastoral experience had never taught him. The Italian press speaks now of the tug of war within the Vatican on their time and their priorities as Pope. The Curia is a little-known council of power which extends to the political governing of the Vatican, and the Curia was pulling on John Paul. He was constrained by his new position. He was uneasy, and they left him isolated. The article goes on, the politics of Vatican and the pressures of John Paul. They said his strength was in his simplicity, that he was a humble man, but his potential weakness, was that he was too humble and too simple, and he was done in. They suggested that the job doesn't call for humility and simplicity. The pontiff wanted to talk to his weekly audience, and the Curia wouldn't let him. He was persuaded that a pope's duty is only to be seen. He was better to be seen to be carried on a throne. He wanted to be walking among the people, and they wouldn't let him walk in his own Vatican garden. If Pope John Paul received a letter from a bishop asking for help, his instinct in those 32 days was to answer it. But before he answered it, he was instructed that there had to be an opinion expressed by the Curia that it is necessary to research the papal president on any question, and he couldn't answer a question from anybody when he received a letter from any bishop. He was muzzled and silenced. This article goes on, this pontiff chafed at the pomp and ceremony. He didn't want an opulent coronation. He dropped the title of Supreme Pontiff. He loved to walk in Venice and talk to people. He could have adjusted to power. He would have come to grips with the Curia. He would have learned where the power was and how to manipulate them. But according to this article, he didn't have the time. Another article by Jack Anderson, October 13, 1978. The People's Pope was open to discussion, and he says confidential State Department cables reveal that Pope John Paul I was actively seeking advice from world leaders on social and moral issues in the days before his unexpected death. Anderson said he impressed millions with his moral leadership, which is what the church should have, and his abilities of rare quality. And I add, they are indeed rare. He said John Paul was a people's pope, a title he won with affection. He was pursuing channels to communicate with political leaders that would undoubtedly have a significant impact on world problems. This is Jack Anderson. Isn't it a tragedy that every person who could have an impact on our lives, as I say, from Gandhi to John Kennedy and the opening up of dialogue between Russia and the United States with Khrushchev and Kennedy and various people trying to make peace contacts, whenever we get on the bridge of détente or peace, we're pulled back into this deathly murder the leaders game. Anderson said just before his death, the pontiff died. Just before he died, the State Department of the United States was informed that a congressional delegation could discuss sensitive matters with him, such as population control, hunger, health, and family planning. John Paul accepted as a personal burden the search for solutions to pressing problems of world hunger, disease, unsanitary conditions that threaten the lives of millions in underdeveloped countries. What a contrast with his successor, Pope John Paul II, who in his first speech was saying, be prepared to die for Christ, lashing out violent anti-communists, giving us that same Cold War scare we've had on and on and on. Los Angeles Times article, one of those good articles by Andrew Greeley, said, the lead article was, in his brief time, Pope John Paul moved too fast for some. It said, the curial types are not unrelieved by his death. Again, we're going into the Curia. This is the body that makes the political policy in the Vatican. They are not unrelieved by his death. Pope John Paul spent too much time, that was only 33 days, on homilies and too little on the grand political problems. Political problems that he was working on, such as population control, hunger, family planning, unsanitary conditions and disease, those aren't the big problems. They're talking about the grand political problems. He didn't get a chance to worry about too little time on the grand political problems. The LA Times says there were some folks who had taken to censoring his speeches. They did in the Vatican. They told him what he said or couldn't say, and they cut out his speeches those few 33 days. He had to give copies to certain persons in the Curia to read before they were distributed to the press. They cut out his jokes, his anecdotes, his changing of I to the we. They said he moved too fast. He scared them. I'm sure he scared the 20 that didn't vote for him, like the Council of 40. They'll regret his death, but they are happy to return to business as usual. This is written by a Catholic in the Los Angeles Times, that some curial types are not unrelieved, that they'll regret him, but they're back to business as usual in the Vatican. Sinister Romans, he said, are hinting of poison, an absurd charge that cannot be refuted because there was no autopsy. That's written by Andrew Greeley in the Los Angeles Times. The Washington Post has an article on elections in the Vatican. It said the purpose of the conclave isn't to blacken John Paul's name, now that they have their next conclave, but to try and overcome the resistance of cardinals, certain cardinals, and elect as pope a fellow who is part of the church's central government at the Vatican. Cardinal Sarah was mentioned because he said this would be a more thoughtful conclave than letting the last pope in the way he slipped in. It is necessary to seek a shepherd of the souls, according to Cardinal Hoffner of Cologne, but with greater managerial experience. John Paul's pastoral qualities are fundamental, but but there must also be other considerations, the understanding of international problems and experience as a diplomat. You see, they elected the wrong guy, but they caught on after 30 days. The Dean of Sacred College of Cardinals listed certain criticisms heard around Rome of John Paul's brief reign, and the list was not just the criteria for what would be a new pope, but the shortcomings of the old pope. What that kind of talk used to go on in private whispers in the Vatican. They left satirical cartoons around, like a front page cartoon of one of the magazines in Rome showed him as reading a magazine, and inside the magazine was a Mickey Mouse comic book that he was supposed to be reading, as if he was simple-minded. And then they suggested that Cardinal Vanelli of Florence was pouring a vial of poison into a cup of tea. They had a picture of him, and in the background, stretched out in bed, was John Paul reading a popular Roman magazine, but inside was a Mickey Mouse comic book. So on the one hand, they have him being poisoned by the cardinals, and the other, because he is so simplistic. Andrew Greeley, as I noted, had three excellent articles on the Vatican. He had an article October the 15th, "The Pope Has Turned a Corner," and he goes into the problems and the conflicts of the Catholic Church in modern society and talks about the battle lines of democracy versus freedom, that the Catholic Church fights certain truths and has held back certain rights of people because of the nature of their religion, that the worldview takes giant steps into human progress, and the church thinks that these steps are an assault on Christian truth, that in the world of science, we see it as liberating mankind from superstition, and the church feels that the Bible and religious truths cannot be tested according to scientific data, that they have to be accepted on trust as fact, and the power of the Pope comes through certain absolute powers, and he gives orders out to the Catholics in the world with absolute powers, where the world, real world, sees the papal power as a dark age of oppression. And Andrew Greeley goes into the conflict of the battle lines, that these are the battle lines, and he says, some Catholics now want to rejoin the world and give the Catholic Church a place in the living world, where the Pope, once that is the defender of the rights of the poor, a long, long time ago, once, long ago, spoke as if it could be a democratic institution. He says, along came Pius the Ninth, Pius the Tenth, the 11th, Pius the 12th, and all of them wiped out any openness and destroyed the lives of many decent Romans and went into four decades of Catholic history and white terror. Greeley says this new pope can slow down but can't reverse the entry of Catholics into the world, but he's not sure, and he says that the changing of the popes will make a big difference into whether we stay in the past or whether the curia and the new power, the political power and the clout, can keep the Catholic Church back like it's been kept for so many, many years. He says, even if the new pope is committed to integrating that Catholic Church more fully into the modern world, he will never be able to do so unless he is free to govern effectively, and to do that, he has to have some counterweight to what is known as the Roman Curia. The Curia is compared in these articles of Greeley, he explains what it is. It's a new word. If you don't study the Catholic Church, the C-U-R-I-A, he says it's not different than any other bureaucracy. It's similar to when the President of the United States have tried, and he uses the example of John Kennedy, have tried with little success to bring the White House under the control of America and the federal agencies. He said presidents, popes, mayors, newspaper editors, college deans come and go, that men who process papers and stamp documents, exchange memos, and execute decisions stay on forever. And the Curia is that body of people that pass memos back and forth and execute decisions and decide if presidents like John Kennedy survive or popes like Pope John Paul I are allowed to survive or not. There's one article in the Los Angeles Times said that Pope John the 23rd, who again was in office from 1958 to June of 63, found some balance of power in a mini curia, which he created when he was the Pope. Pope John Paul I had said that the counterforce against him was pulling him down, and it was without balance. And he said, in quotes, "Without balance, you are the curia's prisoner." He said, "It's not because the curia is a bad bureaucracy, but because it is a bureaucracy." The curia inside the Vatican lost out in the election of John Paul I, and now they're being blamed for the death of John Paul I. And there's this talk of poison. This is again in the Los Angeles Times articles, and others are charging the curia with isolating Pope John Paul I so much that the burden of his office destroyed him. In the past, the curia was put in the role of the reactionary, heavy, and papal election problems. And in this particular case, with 20 of them not voting, Pope John Paul I got in, but now they're being blamed, some of them, for his death, and then they could control the election the next time around. The Los Angeles Times article goes on and says, "The curia are not evil men. They are doing what they think is their job," which I might add, and isn't in the article, is like the Catholic Church in the Middle Ages or during the Inquisition or the period of concentration camps, or turning their cheeks away to the notorious Ustashi group and the genocide and the torture following World War II and during the World War. And we don't have to go into what the Catholic Church condoned in Central and South America to native populations and the genocidal policies that took over there. The article in the Times says that the curia are not evil men. They're doing what they think is their job. Their job is often not the same as their chief executive thinks is their job. The curia in Rome had complained that Pope John Paul spent too much time on his sermons, not enough time and attention to their briefings of his world problems. But the fact is that the curia didn't even vote for him, so they had reason to dislike him before he became the Pope, and it wasn't that he wasn't looking at world problems, it's just that he wasn't the man that they wanted in the office. Andrew Greeley referred to the curia in the Vatican as stage managers, and when Pope John Paul was in, and remember, just 33 days, he wanted to see people, and they herded people away from him, and they strove to keep him away from the masses that he loved and to maintain to some of that old monarchical dignity. He would call to the kids in the audience, and he would talk to them just as he did when he walked around the streets of Venice. He loved people, and he showed it, and the curia wanted to separate him, which is a way of just killing him before he actually died. The blue pencil pushers, according to Andrew Greeley, censored, as I said, his public statements. They made them more formal. They had security folks around him. Security folks, again, I think of the guarding of our presidents and congressmen and so forth before their assassinations. He had security folks, and they even prevented him from walking in the garden in the Vatican, which he liked to do. He liked to walk in the garden. They cut out his speeches. They cut out his audiences, his contact with people. The blue pencil pushers censored his statements. The security folks wouldn't let him walk in the garden. I mean, here was a man who would be trusted and loved by everybody, and they didn't have much time to rub up against him. The result of all their well-meant intervention was to make him a virtual prisoner. These 33 days, you don't think of the happy John Paul I living and smiling out the 33 days as being tortured, but they gave him the isolation treatment in preparation. Andrew Greeley says they were going to teach him how the church worked. He said, "Holy Mother of God," he told one of his friends, "I know nothing." When he got the job of Pope, he had no idea how it was really run. The bureaucracies are conservative, Greeley says. They are used to established ways of doing things. They have to be pushed and pulled into changing them, whether they're universities or corporations or newspapers or governments, whether they're civil or ecclesiastical, and every new executive meets the challenge of how to make a change against that old bureaucracy. The actual meaning of curia is three things. One, the conservative cardinals, mostly Italians. The other are the cardinals working in Rome who are not Italian but are living in Rome for some reason. And the third are the professional administrators of the church. And those are one, I suppose, that take care of the pocketbooks and the investments. And what's good for the Vatican, I'm sure, isn't always good for the native population. A Catholic, Andrew Greeley, was writing in the Los Angeles Times, there are many conspiracies inside of the Curia, as there are in any corporate bureaucracy in the world. The Curia is not a monolithic conspiracy. The new pope will have to solve some of the same problems that killed Pope John Paul I. I mean, Andrew Greeley is concerned about this new pope and how many orders he'll be taking from the Curia, and he says that he'll have to have some balance, a neutral space in there. Otherwise, he said, this next pope will not govern. He will be passed around the stormy seas of bureaucratic guerrilla warfare. This is written by a man, a Roman Catholic priest himself, who warned us that this time that may not have a religious experience, that the new pope coming in may not be a religious experience, and he says that if he doesn't have control of his own, he will be passed around the stormy seas of bureaucratic guerrilla warfare. Another article, October the 14th in the Washington Post, titled The Vatican Campaign Cast John Paul as a Poor Administrator. And they said, as an effective head of the church, he created resentments among the fellow cardinals. The cardinals who may consider that John Paul was, on reflection, not the right choice at all, and they're burdened by a large measure of their responsibility in having somebody that couldn't handle the Curia. In other words, a man was elected that many priests in the Third World or the moderates believed in, but they're partly responsible because what they called a good administrator means a hard-ass fascist couldn't get along with a hard bunch who are really running the world today and have been running it for a long, long time. The Post said Luciani's smiling countenance was a refreshing change of pace for many of the faithful, and the obvious craving of Catholics for a less intellectually distant pope than Paul VI, and they hoped that they would get somebody who was warm and fun-loving. And the terrible, terrible tragedy is that having this Pope Paul VI, I refer to him as the OSS Montini Pope, he wasn't that much fun, and he was heavily into politics and fascism and the whole Cold War period that has been going on since he was in 1963. And it's just a shame that the whole world has to see a decent person knocked out continuously. It does hurt. It hurts the young people. It hurts the older people and anyone with any sensitivity to see these people just slain right in front of you. And, of course, what they say in the articles in the newspaper are not that he wasn't a hard fascist fighting heavier forces. They blame him as a poor administrator because he couldn't handle the Curia. And yet, his speeches were curtailed, his interviews were with people were curtailed, his walks in the garden, he was isolated. It was enough to give you a heart attack or blood pressure, but the symptoms on his face and that smile and the inactivity, the way he died with his that smile and holding his papers and so forth, as I said, looks more like poison than a stroke or a heart attack. But it's just a shame that this kind of person can't survive against those strong people in an organization that should be serving the needs of all the Catholics of the world. And I'm not anti-Catholic, and I want to say that now. I believe there's a handful of people in the Jewish religion, and among the Mormons, the Catholic Church, and so forth, that follow the world fascists, help put them into power, and they don't represent the masses of people at all. I don't in any way want you to think I'm anti-Catholic by what I'm saying and what I'm quoting. Here are newspapers that are certainly not judged as being anti-Catholic in their position, and I'm sharing some of the articles that went on. Next week I will do a tape on Pope John Paul II, the man that succeeded the one that we've talked about on this tape, John Paul I, and I'll go into the mentor of John Paul II again, Mr. Montini, who became Pope Paul VI, who was really the godfather of the current pope. And let me remind you one more time what Andrew Greeley said, that the coalition of the really decent popes, decent cardinals, with the fascist element in the Vatican could fall apart. And he said, and quote, "This time it may not be a religious experience for anyone." On the back, on the remaining part of this tape, I just want to mention a letter that I wrote to Mr. John Stanish, Department of Justice, the Office of Pardon Attorney in Washington, D.C., 20530. And this has to do with Patty Hearst, because you, those of you that have followed my work know how long I've been researching the Patty Hearst SLA story and trying to get her out of prison. And I've been trying to expose the links of the CIA and the FBI to the creation of the Symbionese Liberation Army. November the 6th, 1978, I wrote, "Dear Mr. Stanish, since my last letter to you, September the 27th, 1978, I've been in touch with Mr. Dothard Perry. Mr. Perry wrote several articles about the SLA and contacted me a year ago regarding his FBI teletypes on the SLA. I reminded Mr. Stanish that Dothard Perry was with Patty Hearst the day before the shootout in Los Angeles, that he worked for the FBI for 8 years, that he had teletypes proving that the Los Angeles Police Department and the FBI had foreknowledge of the killing of Dr. Marcus Foster, the school board chairman in Oakland, and that they had foreknowledge of the kidnapping of Patty Hearst, and that these documents were available if he wanted them, and that they knew for 16 months where Patty Hearst was in the summer of 1974 and through 75. And I said, when you're working on the petition for commutation of sentence for Patty Hearst, keep in mind that more people will hopefully surface. I haven't yet figured out, I said in the letter, why Randolph Hearst hasn't filed a suit for $2 million against the Oakland Police Department or the FBI for kidnapping his daughter and making him put out $2 million for that phony counterintelligence operation. And then I said, how can you keep Patricia Hearst in one more day? What is your bottom line through this legal maze of stalling time? Where is your decency? I suggest that you get going with your paperwork and allow her to walk out of prison immediately. Signed, Mae Brussel." And I sent another copy to President Jimmy Carter at the White House, and I sent this letter to FBI Director William Webster. I dated it. It was sent out November the 6th, 1978, and that was a Monday, and I assume was in Washington by Wednesday or Thursday. But Monday of this week, on the 13th of November, I heard that Patty Hearst will be out by Christmas, and I just wonder if this kind of putting on the line just exactly what they know already about the Hearst case causes them to move faster. I don't think that petitions for getting out have a great effect, but then it can look like the masses wanted it or the people wanted it. I think the only thing that moves these bastards is the information that these documents exist and that there could be lawsuits and they're available for lawsuits. And I think they run scared because they're a bunch of cowards. I don't have any particular knowledge of Patty Hearst personally. I've never met her. I was supposed to go up and see her. I haven't been up to the prison to see her, and I've never met her family. They've never been interested in my research. And as a matter of fact, Dothard Perry wanted to make an arrangement to meet them and wanted something like $50 or $60 for his transportation to come to meet them. And I don't even think the Hearst people were interested in putting up the money to see the copies of the documents that he has, that he was with Patricia the day before the shootouts. I don't understand the minds of those people, but the fact remains that if the counterintelligence operation works and gets away with it in one case, they can do it in many, many other cases. And I just continuously want to expose the tentacles of our society that are so false and are used by the media and created by the media and are nursed along and founded in Washington, D.C., in the Pentagon, and in the intelligence community, and then permeate our local society and individuals in our local society. In closing this tape, I just want to warn you about a very important subject that I'll be going into at length when we finish this series on the Vatican and the new Pope John Paul II. If you can go to the library and get a hold of the Boston Globe, November the 12th, 1978, it's about the secret Hughes Medical Institute, which I have said over and over again is probably the number one problem in the United States that will bring us into a total fascism with its secrecy. They're opening up a large medical institute. They're moving from Florida and secrecy into Boston, where they're going to have 12 medical institutes and facilities centered around the country, and they'll be connected by satellite from one institute to the other, where they will study genetics, immunology, endocrinology, and metabolism. And I will do more on this later, but in the meantime, if you go to a library, you can photocopy or ask for this copy or write to the Boston Globe, Sunday, November the 12th, 1978. I worry about the Central Intelligence Agency, secret hospitals and experiments, and the spreading of these hospitals by satellite, and it isn't a far cry away from Dachau and Auschwitz, the hometown of Pope John Paul II. We'll get back to him next week.